where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
So you wake up in the morning just to work and fight yourself, and then somebody tells you that you're over someone else. So what's it all about? It's money. Work it out.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So as we're marching up to Labor Day, the talk, jobs, as we're marching towards November in the presidential race, jobs on the horizon, manufacturing, rebuilding America, great frames. The question is, how do we do that? And how do we do it in the way that is good for the economy and good for our planet? And what we've been talking about this week is how we use renewable energy, how we use technology, and how we use smart thoughts, smart policy, smart investments to make sure that the money we spend, the work that we do, and the economy we build is actually good for us. We're here to talk a little bit about the work that they do out in Western Pennsylvania. I've asked Mark Mondor, he is the principal and co-founder of Evolve EA, to come talk with us. Mark, thanks for taking time.
Yeah, Rick, good to be here.
So, you know, I look at this frame as we're marching towards, you know, Labor Day and the election and all of this stuff, jobs front and center. I say rebuilding our infrastructure, rebuilding our buildings, you know, doing a whole bunch of smart stuff. Way to create jobs and get people good, in my view, good union jobs that they can support a family with.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to look at these as investments, really. I mean, it's the social benefit, the infrastructure building, the clean environment, the clean air, the benefits of that are a byproduct of the fact that you're creating good, quality-paying jobs. So it all goes together. It's really a triple bottom line.
Now, your specialty is in something called LEED certification, right? You're kind of a LEED guy, right?
Correct. We started with LEED early on, and we're big believers in it. And for your viewers or listeners who might not know, LEED is a green building rating system, and it's really emerged as the dominant global green building standard. It's been around since 1998, and now it's really dominant. It's in 120 countries. So we've picked up on this when we formed our firm in 2004. We started on with LEED Consulting as the third party. And you know, we do a lot of green building and sustainability consulting and design, but the LEED has always been one of our mainstays.
Right, because I wanted to go through that a little bit, because you know, you hear a lot about it. And you know, when I went out to Pittsburgh for a couple of conventions and a bunch of stuff, you go to the David Lawrence Center there, and I was told it was LEED certified back in the day, and I guess again done. What exactly does it mean when something is LEED certified? What are the parameters? What are the requirements?
There's about six different LEED rating systems, and within that there's probably about 20 different categories. But in general, it's a sustainability rating system that codifies the impact that your building is going to have on the environment. So LEED looks at the impact of the site, of the water efficiency, energy efficiency, and the overall health of the people inside of the building, you know, low-emitting materials, ability to have proper ventilation, and so forth. So all of these together have a series of prerequisites that have to be met. In other words, you can't have a LEED certified building without meeting these prerequisites. And then the rest is credits that lead to points. And the more points you have, the higher a level of certification you can have, certified to silver, to gold, to platinum.
Now,
in the case of the convention center, you know, that started out as a LEED for new construction gold certification back in 2003, and that was big news. That was the biggest LEED certified building in the world right here in Pennsylvania. And as time went and that building was able to prove concept of how efficient it was, how it was able to recycle its own wastewater, I mean, a lot of different things, natural ventilation, natural daylighting. The municipality decided to do a LEED for existing buildings rating for LEED certification. And where we got gold in the first time around, we were able to get platinum as a LEED for existing buildings. So it actually is able to demonstrate how well the building actually performs. So that'd be the big difference between LEED for new construction, how the building's supposed to perform, and LEED for existing buildings, how it actually does perform.
Right. And the goal, in my view, is that we've got a lot of opportunities because we've got a lot of buildings that could use investment. And this idea of pushing towards maybe making a lot more buildings LEED certified could help us with one, efficiency of cost, so that it saves money, but two, you know, that kind of saving the planet thing is kind of a big thing for me.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. You've said a mouthful, especially, you know, in the Northeast. I mean, there's just so many buildings that are, you know, aging, you know, 50, 60, 100 years old. And these buildings are really a prime opportunity for energy efficiency, for weatherization, to improve their energy performance. And as you pointed out, that's the byproduct of that is that it actually lessens the impact of the building on the environment. And it's good for the people inside, and it's good quality work.
So how do we get to the point to where, because here's my frustration, Mark. We live in a time politically where we can't seem to get a road paved half the time, and we can't agree that we need an infrastructure plan and that we need to rebuild things. How do we get to the point where we start thinking down the road and visionary thoughts down into the future to invest in this kind of certification, to invest in the future and create these kind of jobs that we both, I think, agree that we absolutely need? How do you think we move that forward?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good question, Rick. I mean, on one hand, you have codes and how you have to build for minimum compliance. In other words, if you did it any worse, it would be illegal. You have to do at least code if someone tells you that they're doing it just a code. Well, that's not a very high threshold, of course. But then on the other end of the spectrum, you have these aspirational goals. LEED is one of them, but there are other rating systems as well. That we work with, living buildings and well certifications and things like that, that are able to pull along what the building is able to do. So what we look for are owners, building owners, institutional owners, whether it's organizations, it could be municipalities, but generally organizations that are doing decisions related to building construction and building operations to have high-performing buildings. And what does it mean to them? And it's one thing to say, here, just do LEED certification. It's another thing to customize a solution that really fits the bill of what this particular organization might be trying to do, because everybody's motivations are different. So there's the key, is making this process actually mean something specifically to the owner, and having a common definition of what success is for a particular project. So, you know, LEED certification can very well be that. You know, there's a way to do that for instance, mandatory reporting of how well buildings are performing on an energy-wide level. Philadelphia has that legislation. Pittsburgh's about to get it. Washington, D.C., New York City, other states and even cities have it around the country. But that's the kind of requirement that is really necessary in order to push the baseline along, while at the same time, you can have aspirational goals that are able to show what's possible. And then when those do prove themselves to be possible, then you suddenly have a discussion about it. And the next thing you know, people are interested in figuring out, how can I do this too? You know, what does it mean for us? What does it mean on the real estate, on the appraisal, on the sales side? What does it mean for a REIT to purchase buildings that perform better? Is that better for the overall portfolio? And as you have the financial benefits work their way through, that's when you start to really get interest. And that's really the way capitalism is supposed to work. If the system doesn't make any sense, it's not going to have any takers.
All right, but at the end of the day, it's not going to be one side or the other. It's not going to be the public sector or the private sector leading the way. There's got to be some floor, and we want to keep raising that floor up, but you also have to have the payoff at the end. And, you know, as I've been talking this week about energy efficiency, and I'm kind of shocked at some of the numbers that folks were throwing out, that things have gotten so much better that these investments are literally paying themselves off in very short periods of time. And when I hear that, I go, it's almost a no-brainer that we shouldn't be doing this on mass scales.
Yeah, absolutely. Energy efficiency, like we talked about, is one way to do it. Another thing that we've been doing a lot more of and advocating a lot more of is renewable energy, photovoltaics. You know, that's actually creating energy, you know, free from the sun. And, those types of jobs are growing by leaps and bounds. I know you had Sharon Pillar earlier in the week talking about how many green jobs there are in the state. And that's a perfect example of how you can do good while also doing well. You put photovoltaics or solar panels on a building, that's going to create energy while it's creating good jobs, while it's reducing your operating costs. So it's a good example of a triple bottom line benefit.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, don't we have to start talking about self-sustaining buildings? You know, like I said earlier in the week, you know, when my daughter was four, you know, she looked at the Walmart roof and go, "Dad, why don't they have solar panels on their roof like we do?" And I go, "Well, I don't know, but maybe it's a good idea that we try and make that happen." Because, you know, the idea of having self-sustaining buildings and self-sustaining homes is a goal that I would like to see, you know, push forward down the road at some point.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the technology is getting better and better. I mean, the cost of an installed watt, if you will, is around $3 now, and it used to be about $10 15 years ago. So the fact that that number is getting lower and lower, largely due to production, but also due to technology, is making it that you can have buildings that are generating significant energy for you, even when you're not using it. So you can actually literally have your energy meter spin backwards. That's legal here in Pennsylvania. So you have buildings that are generating energy, and if you actually take a look at how much your building is actually using, you can have what's called a net zero or even a net positive building that's actually able to create more energy than it uses. We've worked on a few of these here in Pittsburgh. One is the Phipps Center. The other is the Frick Environmental Center. You know, I can name them on one hand, but, you know, 15, 20 years from now, when your daughter has kids of her own, there might be hundreds or thousands of buildings that she can point to that are net positive. And that's really the kind of future that we'd like to see.
And that is the hope, absolutely. But out of it, and again, I want to go back to this jobs frame because, you know, we hear a lot about outsourcing. We hear a lot of manufacturing going overseas. These are the kind of jobs that you really can't outsource. These are, you know, in my view, long overdue to get people, you know, upgrading our wire transmission systems, our power lines and all of that stuff. It just seems like now would be a really good time to do this. In fact, 8 years ago would have been a really good time to do it, but now it's not bad.
Oh, it's getting better all the time. I mean, you know, you've got 66,000 clean jobs in Pennsylvania. You know, about 80% of those are just in the energy efficiency field, and about, you know, 9,000 of them are in renewable energy. So this is growing by leaps and bounds. It's you know, growing a good 10, 15, 20% year over year. We expect that's going to continue. Of course, what would be helpful to your point earlier is some you know, legislative indicators to the market that renewable is going to be supported, you know, on a financial, on a municipal, on a regulatory scale. You know, other countries have this, and in America, it's kind of hard to tell from one administration to the other which way things are going to go. I mean, you know, you've got you know, the Clean Power Plan that's under the Clean Air Act that was just approved. Of course, it's being challenged by the courts, but it's expected that stay is going to be overturned in 2017. What does that really mean? You know, I mean, so there's a lot of mixed signals in the marketplace. So there's this struggle going on that really shouldn't be happening, because in reality, you can do well by doing good. These energy efficiency and renewable energy efforts are creating good jobs. They're good for everybody. And the fact that number keeps growing is actually good for everyone.
I'm with you. But let me ask you the last line of questioning I've got for you then, because you hear all the time from the naysayers that, you know, Mark, it'd be great to have that hippy dippy solar stuff and have one of those little windmills spinning around in my yard. But we just can't get enough from it. We're going to all be standing in the dark as the nighttime comes and the wind doesn't blow. There's all of these arguments of why not. Can we possibly get off of, say, fossil fuels and become a renewable net zero kind of society?
It's looking that way. I mean, the appetite, the global appetite for energy, of course, keeps growing, and that's going to continue on for the next decade. So fossil fuel will actually always, at least for the next century, be an integral part of the mix. Now you have the rise of gas that's really been supplanting coal as a fossil fuel, and that's more of a bridge fuel, because the emissions are less, and so that helps to comply with some of the carbon neutrality goals of the Clean Power Plan and so forth that I was mentioning. So you're able to address you know, some of the requirements that way. But in reality, if every time you look at a rooftop, every time you look at a hillside, that is just free energy that's there for the taking. You know, once we're able to actually have photovoltaics and then a renewable energy grid throughout, or we'll be able to address that. I mean, as far as the sun setting or the wind not blowing, What we have with net metering is the ability to feed that energy back into the grid. So it's not a question of not being able to use it. If you're creating more energy than you're using, you're feeding it into the grid, and that's actually acting as your battery. So there's no waste there. That's what makes it very clean. That's why net metering is something that's really beneficial.
It just seems to me there are so many opportunities. My frustration is, as someone who wants to do things, my frustration is that there's just this kind of gridlock where we can't do all this really cool stuff. You know, I go back to when I was a kid in the 70s, when Carter put solar panels on the White House. I remember thinking as a kid going, wow, eventually everybody's going to be doing it. And here we are years later, still lagging behind.
Yeah, well, we'll get there, but there are a lot of economic forces fighting on both sides, and we don't need to get into politics here. But there are reasons for which the uptake is not as quick as it really should be. But when you see numbers like this, the Clean Jobs Report, and the ability to have clean air and clean water, clean environment as a result of energy generation through renewables, that's the kind of message and results that resonates with people.
I'm with you, Mark. I appreciate you taking a little time sharing some of your experience and knowledge with us. Thanks so much.
Oh, happy to do it, Rick. Thanks to you.
I appreciate it. Love to talk to you again real soon. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.